You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, February 16th, 2021. My name is Emma Vigeland in for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Robert Pape on why the Capitol rioters are different from other extremists. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announces she will create an independent 9/11-style commission to investigate the insurrection attempt after former President Trump was acquitted in the Senate. But Republicans are already feeling the political ramifications of the insurrection and subsequent impeachment from their own party. Republican Senators Richard Burr and Bill Cassidy were censured by their state parties for their vote to convict, and other Republicans who voted yes may face the same fate. This comes as Democrats are defending their decision not to call witnesses in order to wrap up President Trump's inevitable acquittal, after Trump's attorneys jumped at the opportunity to ostensibly call hundreds of witnesses. Public opinion appears to be on the Democrat side, however. As ABC News Ipsos found in a poll, nearly 60% believe Trump should have been convicted. Meanwhile, Joe Biden looks to put impeachment in the rearview mirror as he begins a road tour this week, working to excite the public about his stimulus package that includes $1,400 checks, hopefully. As word gets to inflation and deficit-obsessed economists like Larry Summers, you don't have the influence you used to, thankfully. Deadly winter storms throughout the South and Midwest leave millions without power, including 4.2 million people in Texas, as record-low extreme temperatures freeze the state's electrical grid. Scientists have linked the severity and frequency of winter weather storms like this to a heating Arctic. Here in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo faces growing calls to resign after evidence mounts that his administration deliberately undercounted nursing home deaths due to coronavirus by nearly half. He addressed a mistake in a press conference, but did not apologize, maybe in his next book, but I doubt it. Biden and Democrats plan to unveil their immigration bill next week, which will grant a path to citizenship for 11 million people, although with the filibuster in place, chances of passage are up in the air. Meanwhile, the Lincoln Project, which hoped to be able to influence Joe Biden as president, faces accusations of shady finances and sexual harassment. Shocker. In Myanmar, the military continues its brutal crackdown of anti-coup protests and protesters as authorities cut internet access throughout the country. And lastly, Israel reportedly blocks a shipment of thousands of doses of COVID vaccine to Gaza, meant for healthcare workers. Gaza has yet to receive any vaccine, despite being occupied by Israel and being home to around 2 million people. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, everybody. I am not Sam. I am in for Sam this week. Very excited to be hosting the Majority Report solo, although we will get a bunch of fun guests in this week. And we have Matt Leck on the other end, who's being a super producer helping me out. So apologies in advance if there are any technical difficulties. I'm still learning this on the fly. But
No, great job, Emma. I just want to point out, apparently there's a Zoom thing where we sound a little bit pitched down. So just imagine yourself a little bit huskier today and you'll get what the audience is feeling. I think it should maybe work itself out. I'm not sure. Zoom is weird, folks. But other than that, Emma, great job on the first rolling of your own intro, which is difficult to do and calibrate. But
so wait, I sounded deep voiced.
Is that we both sound a little bit deep voiced, I think, on YouTube at least. So, but yeah, so I guess people are just going to have to enjoy that. but people thought it was because we were doing this, like I was playing a pre-tape too slowly, but this is actually live. This is actually happening now, and just somehow our voices are a little bit slowed. So anyways,
well hopefully, you know, podcast version, you won't be hearing this, but We have a lot of news to get to, obviously. Specifically, Matt, you know, Ted Cruz, he's been standing by Donald Trump this whole time over this whole impeachment thing, even though Donald Trump called his wife ugly. Donald Trump insinuated that his father assassinated JFK. There were a lot of things that Ted Cruz stood up or had to put up with when it came to Donald Trump.
Was his dad in New Orleans? And why wouldn't the CIA at least have talked to him after being an exile from Cuba? That's the questions I want to know.
I'm just asking questions. But it looks like Ted Cruz may have grown a spine. You know, I didn't check the date on this clip, Matt, but seems like Ted Cruz has figured out Donald Trump may not be the best guy.
Donald seems to think he's Michael Corleone, that if any voter, if any delegate doesn't support Donald Trump, then he's just going to bully him and threaten him. You know, I don't know if the next thing we're going to see is voters or delegates waking up with horses' heads in their bed. But that doesn't belong in the electoral process, and I think Donald needs to renounce this incitement of violence. He needs to stop asking his supporters at rally to punch protesters in the face, and he needs to fire the people responsible. He needs to denounce Manafort and Roger Stone and his campaign team that is encouraging violence, and he needs to stop doing it himself. When Donald Trump himself stands up and says, if I'm not the nominee, there will be rioting in the streets. Well, you know what? Saul Alinsky was laughing in his grave watching Donald Trump incite violence that has no business in our democracy.
Oh, wait, nominee. That was from 2016. But back then, Ted Cruz was quite interested in admonishing Donald Trump for inciting violence. Not so much these days. He works in lockstep with Donald Trump. He votes with him in lockstep. Here we have a tweet from Garrett Hockey. Senator Ted Cruz told me that as intense as yesterday's video presentation of the attack was, managers haven't proven incitement by Trump. Incitement has a high legal bar to clear, particularly pertaining to political speech, which has the most First Amendment protection. But Cruz was very willing to more loosely use that definition when he was trying to score political points on Donald Trump during the primary. Once Trump won the primary and Cruz had to realize, oh, I can't pretend to be this faux populist, this guy who actually just says what Republican voters want, he's going to be the one that wins the primary. That kind of had to settle in for him. And then he's been a good little soldier ever since.
Yeah. But, well, when he was talking to Dana Loesch, she was talking to her, not in his capacity as a constitutional scholar, but in her capacity as a dingbat. So I think where the discrepancy comes from.
A complete panderer. Trumpism is not going to leave the Republican Party anytime soon. There was a poll that came out in Politico Morning Consult that shows that a 2024 primary poll showing that Donald Trump has a 53% approval on who they'd vote for in the primary, with Mike Pence at 12%, Don Jr. at 6%, and then Nikki Haley at 6%, Ted Cruz all the way down there at 4%. So that's the top over majority of nominees who are from Trump world. 53% for Donald Trump himself. Trump has a majority as the Republican nominee in 2024. Mike Pence, 12%, who's Trump adjacent, and of course Donald Trump Jr., who's mini Trump. So this is not going away anytime soon. And I want to reiterate that, because Republicans are trying to purge him from the party in a way that doesn't piss off their voters, but that is going to be impossible. Let's turn to this Bill Cassidy clip, because Bill Cassidy is trying to frame himself as a reasonable Republican, which doesn't exist anymore. There are a handful of Republicans who have larger political aspirations who are trying to get rid of Trump because they see we cannot continue to go down this road. It is not going to work out for us. But sorry, the voters are more interested in the Trump brand of politics when it comes to Republican primary voters. Bill Cassidy of Louisiana voted to impeach Donald Trump. Here is his reasoning that he gave to Chris Wallace on Fox News.
This is Stephanopoulos.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephanopoulos.
Voted to convict President Trump because he is guilty. Why do you think he's guilty? When did you make up your mind?
So I listened very carefully to all the arguments. But if you describe insurrection as I did, as an attempt to prevent the peaceful transfer of power, we can see the president for 2 months after the election promoting that the election was stolen. People still tell me they think Dominion rigged those machines with Hugo Chavez from Venezuela. That is not true. And all the news organizations that promoted that have retracted. He then scheduled the rally for January the 6th, just when the transfer of power was to take place. And he brought together a crowd, but a portion of that was transformed into a mob. And when they went into the Capitol, it was clear that he wished that lawmakers be intimidated. And even after he knew there was violence taking place, he continued to basically sanction the mob being there. And not until later did he actually ask them to leave. All of that points to a motive and a method, and that is wrong. He should be held accountable.
It's important to note that Bill Cassidy just won re-election. None of these Republicans who decided to vote yes on impeachment are really in any political danger. Susan Collins just won re-election. Murkowski, she's made this her brand, as has Mitt Romney. But Cassidy, he actually may face problems if the Republican Party doesn't have a short memory, because he was just formally censured by the Louisiana Party. So there are a lot of inter-party machinations going on here. But most of the party, I will add, is still in lockstep with Trump. And no one is more emblematic of that than Lindsey Graham, because they recognize that, hey, the Republican Party, throughout its entire tenure in the modern history of the country, what they have done best, the way they have held on to power, has been by just appealing to the base, throwing red meat, doing whatever they can in order to make sure the Republican base is appeased. And they've had a lot of success doing that. Donald Trump was the inevitable creation of that kind of politics. But most of these Republican senators know nothing else. And they know that they'll face retribution from voters if they don't continue to do what they've learned and go down that path. And Lindsey Graham has no other mode at this point. Here he is talking to Chris Wallace.
Have, and we shouldn't have followed him, and we shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. Senator, is Governor Haley wrong about Donald Trump's future in the Republican Party?
Yeah, Donald Trump is the most vibrant member of the Republican Party. The Trump movement is alive and well. People believe that he brought change to Washington. Policy-wise, it was long overdue. All I can say is that the most potent force in the Republican Party is President Trump. We need Trump plus. And at the end of the day, I've been involved in politics for over 25 years. The president is a handful, and what happened on January the 6th was terrible for the country, but he's not singularly to blame. Democrats have sat on the sidelines and watched the country be burned down for a year and a half and hadn't said a damn word, and most Republicans are tired of the hypocrisy. So, no, Nikki's wrong about President Trump. North Carolina, the biggest winner, I think, of this whole impeachment trial is Laura Trump. My dear friend Richard Burr, who I like and have been friends to a long time, just made Laura Trump almost a certain nominee for the Senate seat in North Carolina to replace him if she runs. And I'll certainly be behind her because I think she represents the future of the Republican Party.
Dude, you might want to get her name right first. It's Lara Trump. If she is the future of the Republican Party, you might want to figure that part out. But I will reiterate these poll numbers. Trump, 53% for Republican primary voters in 2024. Now, I doubt he'll run. I don't think he wants to face the prospect of defeat again, and he's also profoundly lazy. You can't underestimate that about him. But Mike Pence, 12%. Donald Trump Jr., 6%. Nikki Haley then comes in at 6%. Mitt Romney at 4%. But then Ted Cruz, you go down the list, right? All of these Trump-adjacent people, the people that have surrounded Trump, that have enabled him, that have embraced his style of politics, they are the people that have won over the hearts and minds of Republican voters. And so Lindsey Graham's not very convincing at it because he's a beta, and so he just follows and regurgitates whatever Trump says. So he's not going to appeal to the authoritarian Republican base. There's no question about that. That's done. That's over with. They've already tried that. He did in 2016 when he was vociferously against Trump. And now, of course, he's up his butt. But there's no way to avoid this. And Nikki Haley, I think, will fail spectacularly if she tries to run for president, because the base won't embrace her. Excuse me, I have something caught in my throat. But let's head to Matthew. We have some ads that Sam pre-recorded, right?
Yes, we do. Give me one second here. They just disappeared off my screen right as I was trying to help you out with that cough here.
Issues, guys. I'm aware that I sound listen to what my voice sounded like on the YouTube stream for a second. It's a little creepy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a conversion issue. We're gonna have it sorted out by tomorrow. So maybe it, and also for the podcast listeners, that will be all sorted out too. So, you know, just to give us a little bit of we're testing some stuff out. Hopefully it'll be better in the long run. But anyway, here's Sam with some advertisements. And this might be lower on octave too.
Thanks, Emma. You'll appreciate this ad. It is for Liquid IV. You all know about their popular hydration mix. Emma is totally sold, and apparently her mom is too. Well, Liquid IV's energy multiplier is an absolute game changer, and it gives you that extra boost we all need. One stick is like drinking two cups of coffee. And it's an all-natural alternative to processed energy drinks for a sustained energy boost throughout the day. Look, Emma's a huge fan of Liquid IV, although she tells me that there's one flavor she doesn't like, but she likes like four or five of the other flavors. For me, I am almost now exclusively on this energy multiplier. It's matcha, it's green, and it tastes great, but it is a great coffee substitute for me. Whenever I'm doing the show, I'm pounding this stuff. Energy Multiplier, it's a healthier alternative to traditional energy drinks and coffee. There are no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives. Premium matcha and green energy blend tastes delicious. Provides a lasting energy boost. Liquid IV cellular transport technology delivers an optimal ratio of nutrients for more efficient uptake. So that means I'm getting my, you know, caffeine intake without dehydrating myself like I might when I'm drinking coffee. Use the energy multiplier to help power your mornings, long days at work, maybe your 3-hour podcast. If you're doing that, I can recommend the energy multiplier. It's non-GMO, it's vegan, it's gluten-free, it's dairy and soy-free. Plus, the company has donated over 10 million servings globally. Check it out, folks. It is honestly the fuel of the Majority Report, at least when Sam Cedar is concerned. Grab your Energy Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the promo code MajorityRep. Not Majority Report, MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything when you order and you use promo code MajorityRep. At liquidiv.com. Start fueling your adventures today at liquidiv.com. Promo code MajorityRep. Also, these days, a lot of people have been avoiding going to see a doctor, but we probably all have something that we should see a doctor for at this point. No more putting it off. Making a doctor's appointment feels like it's giving you anxiety or that some type of chore, PlushCare is here for you. They make it super easy to schedule an appointment and see a doctor so you can prioritize your health hassle-free and anxiety-free. PlushCare provides virtual doctor appointments through your smartphone or your computer. You can just pick a time that works for you. You book an appointment online. No more waiting on hold. No more sitting in a crowded waiting room or standing in a crowded waiting room or feeling anxious in a waiting room at all, period. PlushCare, you can be diagnosed, treated, and even have a prescription sent to your pharmacy of choice within minutes. PlushCare accepts most major insurance carriers. It's available in all 50 states. So every one of you who are listening to me in this country can use it. If you're having difficulty managing your emotions during COVID, not surprising, well, PlushCare doctors are available to help with that too. PlushCare makes it easier than ever to take care of yourself inside and out. You can start your membership today. Go to plushcare.com/majority. You start your free 30-day trial. That's plushcare, PlushCare.com/majority for a 30-day free trial. plushcare.com/majority. Look, your health is too important to put off. Here is an easy way to make sure you're in good shape. Check it out, plushcare.com/majority. And lastly, businesses have had to be a little bit flexible this year. Not surprising. Work from home. Pivot from your business models for long-term survival and growth. We're all doing it. Half the time, you know, you got to put tarps up or whatever it is. You're streaming stage shows. If you're doing, I don't know, if you're like a club, concerts online, clothing companies producing N95 masks, everybody's got to be flexible, right? Well, you're in charge for hiring for your businesses. These pivots have made your job even more challenging, believe me, especially if you have to hire for brand new roles. Well, there's one place you can always count on to make hiring faster and easier, and that is called ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, get sent out to over 100 top job boards with one click. And then ZipRecruiter's powerful technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job, and then they actively invite these people to apply. How do I know this is the case? Because I use ZipRecruiter to make one of my best producing, in fact, the last producing hire I made, Brendan. That's where we found Brendan. And he told me that ZipRecruiter basically came out and dragged him in. Good thing, too. Now, I will say this. We got a bunch of great applicants. Just Brendan came in and literally said, like, yeah, no, I know what you do. My last job, I literally had to filter out your YouTube videos because I was looking for the stuff that you cover and I didn't want to see you. That's all it takes to get hired by me, incidentally. Say something that's like, could be taken as somewhat derisive. But the point is, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Incidentally, that's not a recommendation when you go in for your interview. I would not do that with other employees or employers. But anyways, you can see for yourself right now. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. MAJORITY. Majority, as in Majority Report. Let ZipRecruiter take finding qualified candidates off your plate so you can focus on growing your business and doing your work. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, back to Emma.
Thank you, Darth Sam. I mean, should I be... Is this where I can make my bread and butter on Bane impressions, right? While we still have this YouTube conversion issue?
Luke, I am your father.
All right. We're going to try and get this fixed. We're going to take a quick break, and then hopefully our audio issues will be fixed, and we're going to head into Sam's interview. Sam did this wonderfully pre-taped interview with, I have the name right here, Robert Pape. He wrote a piece in The Atlantic on why the Capitol rioters are different in terms of their terror. So, Matt, take it away.
Joining me now, Robert A. Pape. He is the professor of political science at the University of Chicago, specializing in international security affairs. He is also the founder of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats. And we should also mention that this study was undertaken as well with Kevin Ruby, who is a senior research associate at the Chicago Project on Security and Threats, CPOST. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Glad to be here.
Okay, so the Capitol rioters aren't like other extremists. Let's just start with your methodology in how you came to these conclusions.
So at CPOST, we have been doing demographic studies, and I've been doing demographic studies on individuals engaged in political violence for decades. Probably the largest one before this point was when I studied 462 suicide terrorists in 2005. That remains to this day the largest demographic profile of suicide of suicide bombers. And more recently, just before this, in 2017, I led our team at CPOST, where we studied what are now several hundred perpetrators for ISIS who were arrested in the United States and put through U.S. courts in the United States. In these studies, we have a very straightforward methodology. That methodology is to look for all the government, in this case, court documents that we can find on the individuals, and then also all the media reports that we can find. And we have just tremendous access to, for American perpetrators, people arrested in the United States, tremendous access to court documents. So the moment someone is arrested in the United States, there's a criminal complaint. There's a statement of facts. There are affidavits of various kinds. And those are public. Those are not secret in any way. And so we are able to go through those. Now, we need research teams to do it. So in this particular one with the Capitol Hill insurrection, it's been 22 people so far. And then once we go through the court documents, we're also able to go through all of the newspapers in the United States through these awesome databases that are produced, that are updated every day to catch all the stories about here's the hometown person who then was arrested for a Capitol Hill insurrection. So we have an enormous volume of documents here, thousands and thousands of the now 244 individuals who have been arrested for the Capitol Hill insurrection. And I mean, specifically for breaking into the Capitol or breaking into the Capitol grounds, those hanging right off the building, if you see what I mean, Sam. So we're really, we've been, doing this for years. The research team's very good at this. We know how to verify, double check. And so this is really just a tremendous wealth of information to bring to bear to the country.
Okay, let me, I have two questions in regard. One is, do we have a sense of how many people were there? Like, we're not talking like 100,000 people who were there at the whole rally, obviously. But how many do we have? Like, can you?
So there's two theirs, Sam. There's two theirs. There's inside the Capitol building or hanging off of the Capitol building. So that's 800 people. Okay. That's the best estimate we have. That comes from federal authorities. And that's we have every reason to think that that's really quite a good estimate from what we can tell. There's a second there, which is who were in the surrounding streets, like all the way up Pennsylvania Avenue, sort of that there. The best estimate is 50,000. Now that comes from a combination of police reports and journalist reports. We have studied crowd size in the United States. So the study of the Capitol Hill insurrectionists is not the first time I've studied political violence in the United States. I started studying this seriously last April. I became very concerned last April that because of the failures of the federal government with COVID, we would have mass deaths due to COVID, and that would lead to a breakdown in social trust, leading to political violence. So even though we didn't have any in April, not large amounts anyway, I started to reorient these large research teams we have at CPOS. So then we were had already had the teams together to study all the George Floyd protests in the top 50 cities in America. So we have one of the largest studies of that. We also did a study of the 108 individuals arrested by the FBI who were right-wing individuals for deadly violence from 215 to 220. So we're very used to estimating and seeing how estimates are done of, say, crowd size. Okay. And so this time, so those are two there's 800 in the Capitol and then 50,000 in the vicinity of the Capitol.
So approximately under 2% of the people who showed up at the rally, as it were, ended up actually attacking the Capitol in some way, or however you want to characterize it.
That's right. That's right. You've got it just right, Sam. We're never really, I think, going to be able to survey the 50,000 who were there because many just left, of course. So what we are able to do is survey those arrested, that's what we've done.
Let me ask you just one more question on that cohort, the ones that are arrested. Mm-hmm. How do you account for in the context of like, because you're trying to figure out who these people are as a class, as a cohort. How do you account for the mechanism in which they're arrested, right? Which I presume is like a function of largely identifying them through social media, through them being on video, maybe, or them videotaping themselves and posting that maybe like, I was there or I'm on Facebook.
Yeah. So the mechanism by which they're arrested varies by arresting agency. So they were arrested by three different agencies, each with their own investigation programs, so to speak, or protocols, and over different periods of time. So there's those arrested by the Capitol Hill police and the Washington, D.C. police on the day itself. That is, they were in the building, they came out, they got arrested by those two entities. And then there's those arrested by the FBI, which are still coming to this day. They have very different investigation protocols. And so what we're able to do, Sam, is partition the data. And we can see, well, is pool one different than pool two, the FBI pool? That allows us to ask questions like, how do they differ on all the different dimensions that you're seeing in our study? And the fact is, they don't, you see.
I was trying to figure out if your pool in some way gets tainted because of the way they're apprehended, and you've just answered that question. So it felt like you anticipated that question.
But Sam, this is not this is a great question on your part. It shows you're really following sort of the details of how this could be done. But also, this would be a normal question that we would address in not just the Capitol Hill insurrection. This is just so you're talking to, you know, one of the people in the world who really does this for, you know, kind of a living, so to speak. So this isn't the first time we would have done it. It's not the first time we would have confronted this kind of a puzzle.
Fair enough. And all right. So there were four findings that you suggest stand out, at least. And let's go through those. And maybe, you know, maybe I don't know that we're going to have time today, but I would be curious about what your findings are in the George Floyd protest, too, frankly.
Well, you're just going to have to. That's going to be there's a whole study of the impact of DHS on violence in Portland compared to Seattle. So there's a whole that's not a 1 minute thing. OK,
report part two of this. But yeah. OK. You start off that the first finding that you had that stands out was that you write the attack on the Capitol was unmistakably an act of political violence, not an exercise in vandalism or trespassing amid a disorderly protest that had spiraled out of control. Explain what that means and how you know.
Yeah, so many people are putting this in the context of a criminal framework. Was this like murder? And this is what you're seeing right now in the Senate trial, because you have lawyers who are former prosecutors who prosecuted for murder. And so they're basically trying to put this in a criminal context. Well, that's not really the way. Certainly, that's not my background. My background is political violence. And what's special is the motive, the nature of the motive. So in this case, the motive was clearly political. And why do I say that? It's because we have the testimony of the insurrectionists themselves in the court documents. And this testimony is not just kind of loose things they said in the media, but interviews they gave to the FBI, which they are accountable for. So this testimony, we have dozens and dozens of individuals saying different versions of they came to the Capitol or to the Washington on January 6th because President Trump called them to. They marched on the Capitol because President Trump told them to stop the counting, the constitutionally mandated process of counting the Congress certifying the vote for President Biden. There's no other. It's not like that's just one of six or seven different motives going on here. That's just it. There's not a comparison motive to really point to, Sam, in this case. in this case, it's just absolutely clear that the motive here was a political motive. And that is very important to understand, that we're in a domain of political violence. And this is just a different type of framework than understanding like criminal trespassing. Of course, it's against the violence is against the law. That's not different. It's not like, well, it's political, it's okay. That's not it. It's that this isn't driven by personal motives. This is driven by this political motive. And that's what's really special, because we just haven't had an explosion of political violence like this. Sort of in our lifetimes in the United States. This is a really large amount of political violence that occurred on January 6th, and it's a prominent amount, meaning the Capitol itself.
How is, you know, the use of political violence or political, and you know, the violence, I think, is obvious, but the political here, how does that work? I don't want you to go into, you know, in depth into like the George Floyd protests or the BLM protests, but would you, is that the same thing? Like how
the violence in the George Floyd protests. So we've studied these in detail. As you know, the violence is happening only to about 5 or 6% of the protests. We can talk about this in great detail. But that, too, is overwhelmingly political violence. There is some what you might call normal criminal violence with respect to the George Floyd protests, which is the looting and vandalism that, of course, your listeners will be very familiar with. That's not what I mean by political violence. That, too, occurred during the George Floyd protests. So that was an additional factor. But the George Floyd protests here were overwhelmingly motivated toward a political cause, such as defunding the police or reforming the police. And we know that in the same way, which is we know that the slogans, essentially the testimony of the individuals doing the protests, that led to them being violent. The difference here in degree of violence, though, is also something to point out. So the George Floyd protests were overwhelmingly non-lethal violence, with no indication that lethal violence was intended. Here, in the case of the Capitol, that is on display in the trial in the Senate, and it's quite clear that from the crying of, you know, hang Mike Pence and so forth, that there's much more lethal intent here with the Capitol Hill insurrection than we ever saw with really those, you know, sort of in those top 50 cities, you know, many, many thousands of protests in those top 50 cities in America with the George Floyd protests. So this is a whole degree of more violent political behavior than we saw with the George Floyd protests.
So we have lethal intent is a distinguishing mark, and it, and let me ask you this, if this is a classification as well, that when you describe people saying we're there to stop the certification of the vote, that seems to me to be very like tactical or specific, like almost like it's almost like we went to blow up a bridge, as opposed to, I mean, is that a protest in that instance? Like, I perceive, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I perceive
yeah,
BLM protests to be protests. There are violence that may maybe violence that happens in those protests, but it's non-directed. It is more of a sort of a flailing.
So just to parse the two pieces again, political versus degree of violence. Okay. So the political element is about changing politics in your favor. So what the stopping of the vote for President Biden, that's not a small tactical thing. That's how President Biden becomes president. So if the insurrectionists are able to stop the vote count, then Trump remains president. So this isn't just a window dressing. This isn't just, this is just a minor thing. I mean, who cares if Congress certifies the vote? President Trump would be president today.
Hold it.
Yeah, I understand that you may disagree and say people would reject that.
No.
But this is a much bigger deal.
Yeah. I'm saying, constitutionally speaking, if there's no vote that's certified, his term ends on January 20th.
He would claim that he had, well, let's put it this way. You would then have two presidents. Let me back up to be more precise. Have two presidents, each of whom claiming they were the legitimate president. No body like the Congress having certified one over the other. So you would have a Venezuelan like situation, exactly what we have in Venezuela, which is person A claiming to be the legitimate president, President B. It's now out of the constitutional framework because we're past January 20th. So this is not in the Constitution of how you resolve this. You see what I mean? So this is what I meant. I should have been a little more precise, Sam.
Okay. I'm sorry. And I don't mean to be picky about that. I guess for me, it was just the question of is like, I'm trying to differentiate from the perspective of the phenomenon, not even the implications of it. But like, one is I'm going over there to do something mechanical. It'll have big impact without a doubt. I mean, obviously, but one is very sort of specific mechanical. The other is I'm trying to signal to society that we've had enough, broadly speaking. It's not even like I'm going to, change this specific lever to change these things. We're calling for reform as opposed to a specific, we're going to stop a specific act.
Yeah, it's a degree of control over the political outcome. So in the case of the Capitol Hill insurrection, it's truly the insurrectionists imposing their decision on the rest of the country. In the case of the George Floyd protest, what you're saying is, well, what they're doing is calling on political leaders to change their minds, but still operate through the constitutional systems we have in our country. They're not imposing or overthrowing the Constitution and imposing their will on the outcome. The insurrectionists are different. That really is imposing their will. And that's that difference in gradation of control. And I think it makes it far more serious of a political act because they're absolutely overturning the Constitution.
So your second major finding is that a large majority of the suspects in the Capitol riot have no connection to existing far right militias, white nationalist gangs, or other established violent organizations. And you say that in your studying, you erred on the side of inclusion. And so even having done that, there's no affiliation there. I don't know if there's much to expand on there, I guess, except for then the third finding, which...
Well, hold it. Just to give you a little bit of update here. So that what you're reading was based on 193 people arrested to this right this moment as I speak. So we're adding cases every day. It's 244. So an extra 50. And of course, many of your listeners will have heard that yesterday we arrested 5 Proud Boys. And so they might say, well, wait a minute, does the findings change? Well, the answer to that is today with 244, 12% of the Capitol Hill insurrectionists were members of organized right-wing militia and militia-like groups like the Proud Boys or the 3%ers or the Oath Keepers. 88% not. And that's very different here. That's something very different that we've seen with past right-wing extremists, where the proportion that are part of these organized militia-like groups, like, again, the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, is far higher. I mean, if you include gangs, it's near 50%. So it's a very striking difference between the two pools.
And so what is that? What are the implications of that? Does that mean that...
What this means is the violence is not easily reducible to the usual suspects we've been worried about for decades. This is new. It's a new political movement with violence at its core. isn't just, you know, the collection of the bad, you know, elements. And now they all kind of came together. There was some of that. That's a very small part of this layer cake, however. What this means is this is a new political movement. It's a mass movement. It's reached into the mainstream. As you know, our third finding has to, you know, other findings have to do with 40% of them are business owners or from white collar occupations, such as, you know, lawyers, doctors, attorneys, accountants, et cetera. And so what you have here, Sam, is a very different animal. And we need to realize here that that means that our normal solutions that we would like draw out of our, you know, hip pocket, they're just not going to work in this case.
And so, in other words, it's not like a question of like, we're going to send the FBI out to infiltrate these organized groups because we know more or less where they are and who they are and we can find them there. This is like,
this is mass political movement, which is very different than we've had before. President Trump, clearly, a leader of this new movement. And now he's a leader with demonstrated support for extra legal behavior on the part of a mass of people, in this movement. So this is very, very different. You wouldn't be able to point to a single leader in the last 30, 40 years of, say, the militia movement or the militia movement in, say, Michigan, much less the rest of the country, and say, there's that leader. There's that leader who really, when he calls, they come. When he says go back, they go back. That's not the case. That's the case today. It's very different. And so it's very important not to think, oh, yeah, this is no problem. We're just going to roll it up like we did the militia movement in the 90s. And we're going to go back to a normal state of affairs here. No, this has really long term consequences.
This is, you're almost fighting. I don't know if it's organized. I don't know if it's coherent enough to say an ideology, but it seems to me that what you're saying is that it's analogous to fighting an ideology as opposed to a group.
It's a movement as opposed to an organization or an ideology. It's a congealing movement. It is not fully congealed, which is why we want to study now. We want to understand now. It's important to know the who we're dealing with in the new movement so that we can develop viable solutions that will truly work for America. And we want to do it now, not a couple years from now when it gets worse, because now's the time we might be able to nip it in the bud. But we're not going to be able to nip it in the bud unless we know who we're dealing with. That's just not going to work. And so that's why we're so dedicated to this thrust of really highly granular, focused research here on this information, because that's really what's going to take us forward as a country.
Is it your sense that this movement is Trump contingent?
We don't know yet. So we're working. So we have more. We want it. So we are now engaged. We've just done the Capitol Hill, the first cut, so to speak. We've learned a substantial amount in what we now know, Sam. We haven't even talked about where they come from politically, the different districts yet. But we need to know more to thicken up that understanding. And so some of the questions you're likely to ask me, well, what about this? What about that? Here, these are things we're launched at CPOS into a 3 to 6 month thrust of research based on these, the first set of findings here. We can now go forward. And so, I'm not saying that, you know, we'll know everything in 3 to 6 months. We know a substantial amount now. We'll know substantially more, and we'll be in a far better position here to really think about serious new solutions. And we don't have to wait 3 years for those, but we do need to spend some time really doing more work here before we just kind of, you know, shoot from the hip, so to speak.
Well, fair enough. We need more information is perfectly.
And we need more information precisely because it's so new.
Right.
It's so new. It's not like we just know this and now we're just, you know, opening the file drawer on Proud Boy and we got it all. That's not going to do it here.
What about Q? Have you come across any, like, is Q? So
QAnon makes up QAnon supporters. Those that are identifiable QAnon supporters make up 8% of the insurrectionists that were, you know, the 244, that compares to 17% in the country as a whole by recent surveys. Wow. So in other words, QAnon is less prevalent in the Capitol Hill insurrection than in the country as a whole. It's also important to know that QAnon supporters exist not just in the Republican side, but also among independents, 12%, and also among Democrats, 13%, according to latest national polls. So it, a lot of people want to reduce this either down to, you know, the Proud Boy-like militias or micro-cults like QAnon. The fact of the matter is these are just reaching for, you know, sort of quick answers here. And there are elements of it, of course. But we need to do more work here about the 90% that are not fitting those bills. If we're really, because that's really the surprise here.
I am really surprised that the Q numbers, A, are that low in the Capitol,
yep.
B, that high outside the Capitol. I mean,
exactly.
In the country. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay. So then the fourth one, and I have to say, I did not find this as surprising as maybe, and I'll tell you why just from my radio experience.
Please. Yeah.
The fourth finding you found was that most insurrectionists do not come from deep red strongholds. People familiar with America's political geography might imagine Capitol rioters having marinated in a place where they're unlikely to encounter anyone from the opposite side of the spectrum, but it seems to be the opposite. And I will tell you that from my experience in doing, liberal left talk radio, it was the localities where people were surrounded by conservatives that they were most attached to the radio show because they were sort of felt like they were isolated without it.
So, Sam, having done a lot of talk radio over my 30 years and met hosts like you as well here, I'm also not surprised that you in particular are not surprised. Because I know how much you really understand your audience in a very fine-grained way, and how much you connect with them often on also emotional levels here in ways that our other media really don't. And that's one of the things about call-in shows. So I've often liked doing call-in shows when you can do them for like an hour. And now I don't have that time necessarily right this second, but I'm just saying that it's really you learn a lot about your audience. Well, that's not true for 99% of the people in America, Sam. That's not true for not just your ordinary person who's not a talk show radio host for years, but also in other media as well to have that much of a deep interaction. Second thing to say is I wasn't that surprised either to see that 57% of the insurrectionists are coming from counties Biden won. That too, that was, might say, well, it's a surprise. Well, actually, I do the same kind of analysis of where do the insurgents come from in Iraq? Where do they come from in Afghanistan? They're not coming from the areas that are the most homogeneous. They're coming from the areas that are the most mixed. And that's why when the violence gets going, it takes a while to get going. But when it gets going, it gets going a lot here. So it's not I don't want to overly do this, but it's not a calming thing to know this because it is a pattern that we see around the world in some pretty intense situations. Now, we're nowhere near them. We're nowhere near those kinds of situations. So I'm not bringing it up to say, oh, yes, we are just like this or just like, you know, that situation abroad. What I'm saying is we're in early stages of it. We're seeing things that are very familiar to folks like me who have been studying political violence in this level of granularity for years around the world. And that means we need more effort to understand this movement, because it is a different movement. We don't see in those other places that I'm talking about 13% are business owners. So we don't have that category in our data, if you see. So this is not exactly the same. And so what we got to do is understand American political violence today, not assume it's like the past, but to do it now so that we can try to create viable solutions that work for America.
Okay. And I know you have a heart out in a moment.
I'm going to go. Yeah.
With those four top things. Is there anything else that has come up since that piece in The Atlantic? I mean, I would love to have this conversation again about a broader one, actually. But
well, the big thing I'd like to leave by telling your audience is that on a weekly basis, it'll commonly be a Friday or a Monday. We are updating all of the data. And we're adding new analysis on our website. So if you can just find the University of Chicago Project on Security and Threats and look up research or follow the threads here, if you can put a link somewhere for your audience, if you follow the same links in the Atlantic piece, they will take you to the most recent update, which is more data on the same stuff. And each week there's more. So what this week we just did was QAnon. So that wasn't in the first one. We're going to be doing more stuff like that, Sam, as we go forward here, because this is an ongoing issue. We're able to do more and more analysis, not just data collection. And that's going to turn out to be very valuable. But it's not like there's just going to be one new thing. We need to really incrementally build this. And so that's what we're doing as I speak.
Robert A. Pape, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, also the founder of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats. C-Post, thank you so much for your time today. Fascinating stuff. And like I say, we will have a part two of this in the coming months. Appreciate
it. Great. Absolutely. Good to be on your show, sir.
We are back and we are hopefully sounding normal. I thought that was a great interview. Sam pre-recorded that one, so I will be having guests on for the rest of the week, but we had to get that out there for you guys. So again, hopefully our audio issues are fixed. It sounds okay, Matt?
Yes, I believe we are back to normal.
Okay. So before we head into the fun half, where Nomi is going to be joining us, which will be awesome, that I have a little sidekick. I'm sure she loves being referred to as a sidekick, but somebody to bounce ideas off of on my first day hosting the show solo. I wanted to talk about the horrible storms that we're seeing throughout the country, and of course the insane right-wing response to it. So there has been a clamoring to politicize the storms throughout the country that we're seeing, particularly affecting Texas, where I believe around 2 million people still do not have power. And there have been at minimum 25 deaths accounted for, a majority of them in Texas. It's inherently political because the majority of scientists, the credible ones, are saying that this is caused by a rapidly warming Arctic, which increases the severity and the frequency of these kinds of winter storms in places that don't normally see them, including in Texas. But now you have Breitbart, you have the Wall Street Journal, from, you know, corporate right outlets like the Wall Street Journal to far right outlets like Breitbart, who are throwing it out there that it's the freezing of the wind turbines in Texas. It's because we rely too much on wind technology in Texas that they're experiencing these mass power outages. Now, let's be clear. Yes, there are frozen wind turbines in Texas right now, but that is completely counterfactual. In fact, Texas relies on natural gas at a rate that is much higher than other states in the country. So the wind turbine focus is purely political. Tucker Carlson, he went on TV, I believe, last night and said the windmills failed, like the silly fashion accessories they are, and people in Texas died. By the way, if there were mass outages and mass deaths in states like New York or California that were run traditionally by Democrats, you would hear a more politicized critique about the people in power, but not from
right. Carlson. And I just want to say that's based on like imagery, when like the actual Ryan Cooper has this tweet, the narrative that iced up wind turbines are behind the Texas blackout is total bullshit. In fact, wind was overproducing estimates yesterday. The problem is, we need to be clear, is failing gas infrastructure. Gas, this is from a business press, Business Standard. Gas processing plants across Texas are shutting as liquids freeze inside pipes, disrupting output just as demand jumps. And oil production in the Permian Basin, the biggest U.S. shale play, is moderating as well, slowed down or halted well. So this is purely, you know, the best defense is a good offense. This is the fossil fuel industry and their mouthpieces like Steven Crowder going on the offense.
Oh, yeah. And they know that if they say it enough times, people believe it's true. Again, this is from Bloomberg. The main factors, frozen instruments at natural gas, coal, and even nuclear facilities, as well as limited supplies of natural gas, he said, are the main factors in. This was asked, according to Dan Woodfin, a senior director for the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. They operate the state's power grid. They're basically saying that the main factors are frozen natural gas, coal, and nuclear plants. Like, yeah, that's it. It's not these wind turbines. But
here's just one more, because I think we it does bear, because this is such a concerted effort. You see this everywhere now. But NYC DSA eco-socialists, fossil fuel companies are trying to use the energy shortage. We know the reality is that 26 out of the 30 gigawatts of energy shortage was because gas couldn't be delivered. And we can go to this tweet here. Confidential info from a market participant, ERCOT. I think that's the Texas grid. But yeah, 30 gigawatts of capacity offline.
That's the guy I just quoted, or the.
Oh, is it? Right, yeah. Right.
Or yeah, the, exactly. The organization that I just quoted. Yeah.
26 gigawatts of thermal, mostly natural gas, which can't be fracked, which can't be delivered, which can't get fuel deliveries, which are being priorities for heating loads. So this is a gas fossil fuel infrastructure failure.
Exactly. So with all of that context, Fox got the memo. This is going to be their talking point for what's happening in the center of the country and in Texas and in the Southeast. Here is what they had to say. I believe, what's the name of this host?
Is it Harris Faulkner, I think?
Yeah. All right. Here's their commentary on the winter storms.
Casey just reported millions of Americans in the cold and dark say the lack of power is because of green energy policies and the vilification. Is because of green energy policy.
Sorry, I just wanted to get who said that.
Say the millions of Americans in the cold and dark say
the millions of Americans in the cold and dark. Maybe if they're in the cold and dark, they aren't the people we should be asking for the information. Like I'm talking to people. I know a lot of people in Texas. David Griscom, my co-host on Left Reckoning's family, has been without for the day and a half at least. And this obscuring of the problem is, that's what's really key, like also keeping them in the dark. Unbelievable.
Go back to that, because they're saying this just in, millions of Americans are saying this. There's no,
we convince them.
Right. Well, and it's not even like, Matt, you're giving them too much credit. They're making it up.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Aren't saying this.
Casey just reported millions of Americans in the cold and dark say, the lack of power is because of green energy policies and the vilification of oil, gas, and coal. The stuff that really keeps you warm. Coming up, we're looking out for you. The energy wars.
Just psycho.
Yeah, psychotic. Many people are saying this. Many people are saying this. I mean, Fox is literally, they've gone past just regurgitating right-wing talking points from the top. They're now regurgitating Trump's mannerisms and his way of speech in the way that they're reporting the news. I mean, I would love to find how they came up with that line in their script for the show. Millions of people are saying that it's because we don't rely enough on this kind of energy production. This is a concerted effort, as Matt said before, that's coming from all right-wing papers, from Breitbart to the Wall Street Journal to Fox News, made its way to Tucker Carlson's monologue or whatever he's talking about on his white supremacist show. They are making a propaganda effort to blame what's happening in this country on the exact opposite of the problem, when, of course, we know that the intensity of these storms, the frequency with which they'll happen, it's only going to increase as we continue to rely on these systems that they're saying would have saved us. It's Orwellian, that's overused, but of course, just watch out for these propaganda efforts, because you're going to hear more of this.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, PragerU, for instance, funded by Dan and Ferris Wilkes, which are fracking billionaires. I mean, I'm from North Dakota. If you look at the companies that made the most out of North Dakota shale boom, it was Texan companies. Like, I don't know. It's one thing to see people lie for Trump, right? But this is a civilizational sort of how we structure the economy lie. Like, this is papering. We decided we're going to bet on oil for like the last century, the half century at least. And like, I don't know. It's pretty harrowing to see this amount of propaganda and all hands on deck come into it. But this is the real game, folks. It's to protect fossil fuels.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we are going to head into the fun half now. I appreciate everybody on YouTube who was watching live, bearing with us with the technical difficulties. Of course, this happens on my first day, and it had nothing to do with like anything either of us did. It just was a Zoom to YouTube glitch. So apologies for that. We're going to head into the fun half. Hopefully Nomi can get on. I know she's having some Wi-Fi issues right now. So talk to you guys soon. See you there.
Is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
That guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.